When dusk began to fall, Falcon and Hawk made a cold camp, unable to build a fire that would give their position away. Falcon took out some biscuits and roast meat he'd bought at Campbell and Hatch's. He gave some to Hawk, and they had supper.
One of our problems is going to be water. From what I hear, the Dragoon Mountains are damn near dry as a desert.
Hey, you're right there, Falcon. That's one of the things that keeps the Army from being able to track the engines. Most of the Bluebellies are too dumb to find water out here.
You figure you can do that?
Been doing it for years. There ain't certain signs you look for, and you can dig down a foot or two and find water every time. It ain't tasty, but it's wet, and it'll keep you alive.
Oh, good. One less thing to worry about.
How do you think we ought to handle it when we find the engines?
Well, if we caught them by surprise, and if we knew they only had single-shot rifles or bows and arrows, we could probably take on 10 at a time. But I can't see 4 men and their womenfolk trying to settle out here without weapons. I didn't find any at the cabin, so the Indians have whatever the settlers had, plus whatever they got from the men whose horses they stole. I think we've got to assume they have repeating rifles.
And that means following them to their camp and then picking them off in ones and twos. You think we're good enough to do that and stay hidden where the rest of the band can't find us?
I guess we'll soon find out.
I was afraid you was going to say that.
Of course, if the leader of this band is Naiche, his name's going to be a powerful draw to the other young bucks in the territory. I figure word will have gotten out by now, and others will be straggling in to join him in twos and threes from just about every direction. One thing's certain, we're going to have plenty of targets long before we catch up with the main band.
Shit, you're just full of good news, Falcon.
Falcon and Hawk were up and on the trail before dawn. They rode slow, taking their time and watching their back trail and the land before them. The band of Indians they were following were headed northwest, though they cut back and forth often, changing directions to make their tracks harder to follow. Just before noon, as they approached the crest of a hill overlooking a valley below, Diablo's ears perked up, wagging his head back and forth.
Hold it, Hawk.
Hawk immediately reined to a stop and picked his sharps up from his saddle horn. He glanced back over his shoulder, and Falcon held a finger up to his lips and slipped out of the saddle to the ground. Hawk did the same, anxiously peering back and forth. Falcon got down on his belly and crawled to the top of the hillock and peered over. Entering the valley below, at a distance of about 300 yards, were 4 braves. They rode bareback, and 2 were carrying what appeared to be single-shot rifles, while 1 had an old musket cradled in his arms. Falcon waved Hawk up beside him and pointed.
They must be some renegades on their way to join the ones we've been trailing. They're coming from the wrong direction to be part of Naiche's group.
You think you can pick 1 or 2 off with that long rifle of yours?
Hawk licked the end of his finger and wiped off the front sight of the sharps. He spread his feet out, digging his toes in the sand, his elbows in the dirt, holding the sharps up to take aim. Falcon backed out of sight, then made it to his horse. He climbed into the saddle and got his Steven shotgun ready, holding it in his left hand, the reins in his teeth, and his Colt in his right hand. Hawks' sharps knocked the big man back against his braced feet. Below, an Indian toppled from his mount. Falcon spurred Diablo into action, guiding the stud with his knees as he raced over the hill and down toward the valley floor below. Another brave went flying, knocked off his pony with his arms flung wide. A pair of Indian riders took off at a gallop. One put his rifle to his shoulder and fired. Falcon eared back the hammers on the Stevens with his left hand and fired from the hip, taking the lead buck in the chest. The molten pellets tore the man in two, flinging his lifeless body to the ground and splattering his companion with blood and gore. Falcon fired with his Colt, but missed as the brave waved a tomahawk and leapt from his horse onto Falcon's, knocking them both to the ground. Falcon's shotgun and Colt were knocked from his grasp, and he wrapped his arms around the Indian as they rolled over and over in the dirt. He twisted his head to the side just in time and received only a glance and blow from the tomahawk as he frantically reached for his knife. Falcon managed to wrap his fingers around the handle of his blade as the buck reared back for a killing blow, his eyes wide and reddened with killing fear. The 12-inch blade of his toothpick flashed in the sun as it slid under the Indian's ribs and pierced his heart. He collapsed on top of Falcon, pinning him to the ground. Falcon lay there, every muscle in his body aching and his head pounding as he tried to catch his breath. He reminded himself not to underestimate the Apaches. After a few moments, Hawk came riding up, his sharps resting on his thigh.
You alive under there, Falcon?
With a mighty heave, Falcon pushed the dead man off his chest and struggled to his feet.
Yeah, just barely.
Good. I was just getting used to having company long.
Falcon reclaimed his guns.
That was mighty good shooting back there.
Hell, it was easy with baby here. She don't hardly ever miss.
I think it's time to leave a message of our own.
2 hours later, Falcon stepped back from their handiwork. One of the braves' heads was on a spear. The other three, minus their scalps, were hanging upside down from a cottonwood tree, with empty holes where their eyes should have been.
Hey, you think them Injuns will get the message?
Oh, yeah. One of these boys is going to wander through the happy hunting ground without a head, and the others will be forever blind. Injuns can't stand the idea of being mutilated after death, because they think that's how they'll stay in the afterlife.
You think it'll make any of the ones coming to join Naiche change their minds?
I doubt it, but it will send a message. He'll know the army didn't do this, so it'll give him something else to think about.
Well, I think it must be getting on toward noon. How about we make a nooning?
All right with me. But do you mind if we head up on the trail for a ways first? I don't particularly relish the view here while I'm eating.
Falcon made a fire of dry wood, putting it next to a large boulder under a slight overhang so the smoke would be dispersed. While he brewed coffee in a pot and fried some fatback and beans, Hawk gave him his first lesson in finding the hidden springs and underground water in the high desert regions.
First, you look for any kind of bird activity, because they knows where the water is. Even you see some doves flying toward a particular spot, especially at dusk when they come in to drink, you can be fairly sure there's water somewheres nearby. Now, to find the underground water, you look for a place that has some shade to it, like near some rocks or in the bottom of an arroyo or dry wash. If you see some green to the weeds there, or a small tree or brush, chances are there's water not too far beneath the surface.
I've heard, though to tell the truth I've never had to try it, that some of the cactuses have a lot of liquid in them, and it's drinkable.
Hawk nodded as he plucked a still sizzling chunk of meat from the skillet and bounced it back and forth between his hands until it cooled enough to pop into his mouth.
The one you want to try is the barrel cactus. They're short and squatty and round on top. Best way to get the water out of them is to cut them off at the base and hold them up over your head and let it run right on down your gullet. You got to be careful, though. Them thorns is murder on your hands.
They sat on the ground, leaning back against their saddles, and enjoyed the first hot meal they'd had in several days. Neither talked until their plates were picked clean.
What do you plan to do after we finish with the Indians, Hawk?
I don't know. Go back to mining, I guess. To tell the truth, I don't expect to come out of this fracas without attracting some lead. I just don't think it's in the cards for us to go up against this many redskins and come out of it with our skins intact. Injuns ain't like white men. They don't think like us, and they sure as hell don't act like us.
What do you mean?
Well, if a white man is up against long odds, especially if his fight is with someone armed a lot better than he is, he'll most likely run away and live to fight another day. A redskin, on the other hand, thinks it's a mark of bravery to go up against a superior force. Hell, I've seen a lone brave armed with a tomahawk charge a squadron of men with repeating rifles and never flinch till he was blown out of the saddle. Won't see no white man doing nothing like that. My point is, Falcon, that once these Injuns find out we're on their back trail, they ain't going to just go on about their business and pay us no mind. They's going to come looking for us with a vengeance. And they won't stop till either we're dead or they is. There just ain't no backup to Injuns. It ain't in their character.
I know what you mean. My father, who was out here before most other white men, told me a story once about old mountain man friend of his, a man named Preacher. Seems as Preacher was once taken prisoner by some Indians, Pawnee, I think. These Indians took turns torturing him with what they called games, making him run across hot coals barefoot, passing him between a line of braves who all took little swipes at him with their knives until he was bleeding from 100 cuts, and then burying him up to his head and rode by at full speed, throwing spears at him. But for all that, they couldn't make him scream or cry out for help. And that so impressed them with his courage that they let him go. Of course, they couldn't make it too easy for him, so they set him free naked. And he had to walk across 20 miles of mountain peaks that were covered with snow, without any weapons or food.
And you mean to tell me the old codger made it?
Yep. My father said he saw the scars from the knife wounds and the stubs where some of his toes froze off, but he made it. The old man must have been tough as an armadillo's hide to survive that trek through the mountains.
Well, sir, I think I'm going to take me a little afternoon nap.
Falcon stood up, pulled his rifle from its boot, and started to walk away toward a clump of boulders nearby.
I'll just mosey on over there and keep an eye out for uninvited guests. I wouldn't want you to wake up without your hair.
Oh, much obliged.
Major Wilson Tarver felt an odd mixture of anger and fear. More than 50 Winchester rifles in the hands of Apache savages would be enough to turn the southern Arizona territory into a river of blood. They'd been stolen right under his nose. He spoke to Sergeant Boyd while staring down at the corpses of four soldiers arranged in a row behind the armory.
Jesus. The bastards cut Watkins and Peters to pieces. We ought to line them up and shoot every goddamn one of them.
Things were too quiet, Major. I should have doubled the guard on the armory.
Boyd gave the parade ground and fort walls a lingering stare. Corporal Collins, a new recruit from Ohio, turned away from the bodies, his complexion pale.
I've been fighting the red bastards out here in the West for nearly 20 years, but the Apaches are the worst. It's on account of that crazy one, Geronimo, that they stay stirred up like this. And then there's Naiche, probably the worst of the Chiricahuas. He's every damn bit as bloodthirsty as old Geronimo, maybe worse.
Major Tarver turned his attention to the Indian roll call being conducted inside the reservation. Braves dressed in ragged buckskins and dirty cotton trousers were lined up in front of the barracks showing soldiers their identity tags.
Any idea yet how many broke away last night?
Best we can tell, it wasn't but about a dozen. Only Private Newman ain't done with the counting yet. Worst is, they got enough rifles for 50 more. Won't be long till more of them start slipping off at night to join Naiche and Geronimo.
Armed with repeaters, there will be a considerable amount of bloodshed.
They stole 17 horses. They'll be hard to ride down. Took some of our best remount thoroughbreds, too. Instead of riding them half-starved Indian ponies, they're mounted on some of our best stock.
Sergeant Boyd, assemble two mounted troops. Make sure they're heavily armed and well-provisioned. Get three of our best Pawnee scouts, if they're sober enough to sit a horse this morning.
Yes, sir.
I don't trust our Pawnees, Major Tarver, if you'll pardon me for saying so. That old Shoshone, the one they call Tomo, is the best tracker we've got, and he don't drink nearly so much.
Find him, then. If all four scouts are dead drunk, tie them across their horses till they sober up. We have to get these rifles back and corral this batch of renegades, or every goddamn Apache on this reservation will take off into the mountains.
Tomo, a slope-shouldered man of 50 in buckskins, with long gray hair and a single plait hanging between his shoulder blades, gave the desert floor a lengthy study.
They go south, Sergeant Boyd. Ride many circles to hide direction they go. Maybe so they go to Dragoon Mountains. Rock there be plenty hard to track horse. Easy to hide in Dragoons.
That's the way I had it figured too, Tomo. May as well give up following the tracks and head straight for them there mountains.
East is leading them to some place he knows. I figure he aims to join up with Geronimo and Naiche somewhere up yonder.
A while later, entering a narrow ravine winding through solid rock, Tarver had an uneasy sensation.
Where the hell is that Shoshone?
Can't say for sure. I seen him right around that bend yonder. Can't say as I seen the old bastard since then, not to my best recollection.
Major Tarver and Sergeant Boyd reached for their rifles.
Take cover!
Sergeant Boyd was down off his horse in an instant, knowing he'd make a smaller target. A rifle shot from above lifted Corporal Collins out of his saddle, spinning him like a child's top, blood squirting from a hole in his back. Major Tarver jumped out of his saddle to seek shelter behind a pile of rocks. Soldiers began falling to the ground, bleeding.
Son of a bitch! They thought it surrounded! Tomo led us into a trap! They'll kill every damn one of us! They got us caught in the crossfire!
Sound the retreat! Pull back! We'll get around behind them somehow! Pull back! Sound the retreat!
Only then did Tarver notice the young private with a company bugle tied around his neck, lying face down on the floor of the arroyo.
Withdraw!
He hunkered down to move cautiously away from the gunfire. A bullet struck Private Newman between his shoulders and sent him tumbling to the dirt.
Damn! Goddamn Shoshone led us right to them. I'll have him shot by a firing squad the minute we get back to the fort.
Major Tarver knew the loose horses would fall into the hands of the Apaches unless something was done. He saw Sergeant Boyd slipping carefully along one wall of the ravine while leading his nervous horse.
Send some men after our mounts! It'll only get the men killed! Better to lose a few horses than to get the grass shot off!
I can have you court-martialed!
You gotta be alive to file the charges against me! We ain't got out of this with our scalps just yet!
We got 16 men dead, Major, and 3 more missing. We got 12 wounded, and 4 of those will probably die before morning.
How many horses do we have left, Sergeant?
Only 9 that can carry a rider. Some's wounded so bad we'll have to put him down.
And where's the scout?
Ain't seen him since the shooting started. I figured he rode off when the first gun banged.
I want him tracked down and arrested.
How the hell are we gonna track him down, Major? Far as I can tell, he didn't leave no tracks when he lit out of here.
A man can't simply disappear. Send out a detail to look for him.
Them Apaches are liable to be expecting us, and they'll kill the men we send out.
I gave you an order, Sergeant.
I'll follow it, sir. Only I damn sure ain't gonna go out there myself. You can have me court-martialed soon as we get back to the fort, but I won't go riding up this here canyon to look for Tomo. Be the same as committing suicide. Them Apaches have left a rear guard to see if we follow them. They'll shoot me dead.
I intend to put your refusal in my report to General Crook, Sergeant Boyd.
Put anything in it you want, Major. Only be sure to write down that so far I'm still alive, which is more than you'll be able to say about any other poor bastard you send into that canyon.
Several hours later, the smell of blood had filled the arroyo. 3 dead horses lay among the fallen soldiers. The savage Issa walked among the corpses to inspect the removal of pistols, ammunition, and food.
Naichi and Geronimo will be pleased.
We must make a gift of a gun to the Shoshone.
Yes, Nana. Find Tomo. Tell him we have presents to give him for the victory he gave us today.
I sent Taoyo, and he cannot find him. Tomo rode away into the mountains.
Perhaps he wishes to join Naichi.
He is not Apache. He told me this was not his war. His people have already been made into slaves for the white men far to the north.
Issa looked down at the canyon in the direction Tomo had ridden just before the battle.
Find him. His kindness must not go unrewarded. He could just as easily have given us away to the enemy. It is the way to repay a debt to another warrior.
Late in the afternoon, Falcon and Hawk came upon the remains of an old campfire, surrounded by the tracks of the Indian band they were following. Off to the side was what was left of a mule carcass. It had been gutted and cleaned, and there wasn't a scrap of meat left on the bones. All of the internal organs had been eaten, except the entrails.
I swear to God, Indians will make a meal of anything that walks across. Can you imagine eating a mule?
I guess if I was hungry enough.
And I heard tales of Redskins eating a man's heart or brains if they respected him.
My father stayed with the tribe one winter, and he said they killed some raiders from another tribe and offered to share the heart and brains with him.
What'd he do?
My father was an educated man, and he told me about a book he once read that said, "When in Rome, do as the Romans do." So I suppose he joined right in.
Jesus. I might manage to swallow mule meat if I was starving, but no way I could stomach eating another man's flesh.
You might be surprised at what you're capable of. We better get on the trail. We're burning daylight, and I don't want to be out in the open come sundown.
As they followed Naiche's band of Indians, the trail slowly rose into the Dragoon Mountains, winding through pine, mesquite, and even some aspen at the higher elevations. The colors were breathtaking, and the sweet scent of late-blooming wildflowers contrasted with the tangy bite of pine smell in their noses. But neither man took much notice. They were too busy watching every copse of trees or gathering of boulders for possible ambushers. They knew enough of the Apache to realize it would be difficult to detect their presence until the bullets or arrows came flying. Frank Curry stepped out of his cabin and took a deep breath of the crisp, cool fall air. With any luck, he thought, they'd be able to collect another few $100 worth of gold dust today. The runoff from the fall rains was bringing more and more gold down the small rivers and streams from the mountaintops, and he and his partners planned to pan their share of it. Everyone else in the area was busy mining for silver. They hadn't even thought to look for gold. Frank and his partners were going to show them. Johnny Brown and William Duke walked out of the cabin, stretching and yawning. Johnny handed Frank a cup of coffee.
Looks like it's going to be a good day for panning.
Yep. God damn. Didn't you put no eggshells in this brew? It's full of grounds.
If and you don't like it, partner, go in there and make your own. I don't know who appointed me chief cook and bottle washer, but I'm getting kind of tired of having to do all of it myself.
Ah, quit your bitching. We getting plum rich up here. When the snows come in another few weeks, we can shut down and go into Tombstone and winter over in style till the spring comes.
Yeah, I ain't seen a woman in so long about forgot what they look like.
Not me. I remember real good what they like.
By the way, where's Cal?
He left a little while ago. Said he'd found a small cave betwixt two boulders yesterday. Wanted to see if it might have a vein in it.
But you mean we got all the dust and nuggets we can pick up out here, and that fool's going looking for a vein in a cave?
Billy staggered a step or two and turned around, the shaft of an arrow sticking out of his left eye. Johnny took a bullet in his right shoulder, spinning him around and dropping him to his knees.
God damn!
Frank grabbed Johnny by the arm and jerked him to his feet as Billy collapsed onto his back in the sand. Back inside the cabin, Johnny wrapped a towel around his arm to stop the bleeding. Frank shut wooden shutters on the windows, using small pegs to bolt them shut. They had made the shutters with small openings cut out for gun ports just in case.
Did you see how many there were out there?
Hell no, I was too busy getting shot to take notice.
Frank threw him a Henry repeating rifle and a box of cartridges as he took down an American Arms 10-gauge shotgun and a Winchester for himself. Frank peered through the gun port of his window.
You think I ought to make a run out there and see if I can get Billy in here?
You wouldn't get 10 feet out the door before they blow your head off, Frank. Gosh, besides, ain't no way Billy can survive that wound.
Frank put the barrel of his Winchester out the hole in the shutter and took careful aim. He saw an Indian crawling on his belly toward Billy, his knife in his teeth, war paint on his face, and an eagle feather in his hair.
Sons of bitches!
Frank saw a shot take a chunk out of the left shoulder of the brave, spewing blood and tissue all over his face. He dropped his knife and grabbed his arm, squirming back around to crawl away from where Billy lay.
Looked bad, partner. When you fired, I saw at least five of the bastards moving over my side of the cabin. Looks like they're trying to circle around and come at us from behind.
Johnny scrambled over to a window on the other side of the cabin and pointed his Henry out the gun port.
Damn it, shot wide!
Luckily, they had planned the location of the cabin well. It was located in a clearing, at least 50 yards from the nearest cover. There were no overhanging rocks or nearby elevations, and they always stocked plenty of water and food inside. Their only problem was that the house was designed for four men to defend it, and with Billy's death and Cal's absence, it would be difficult to watch all sides of the structure.
You think we got a chance, partner?
Not unless there happens to be an army squad nearby. All they got to do is wait for dark. Then they can rush us from all sides or fire the cabin. Either way, we're done for.
But at least we can take some of the bastards with us.
Yeah, but save at least one bullet for yourself. No way you can let them take you alive.
Glancing back over his shoulder, Frank saw a small puddle of blood forming on the floor on Johnny's right side. Evidently, his arm was still leaking blood from the wound.
God damn it! This is full of shit! I ain't just gonna sit here and let them heathens wait to kill me!
He scurried over to Johnny, keeping low and out of the line of fire through the windows in case one of the Indians got a lucky shot through the gun port.
Partner, we gotta at least attempt to move. Otherwise, they're gonna kill us for sure.
Don't seem to me we have a surplus of choices.
Let's make a run for the corral. Maybe we can get to our mounts and manage to get away before they got to us.
It'd be suicide. Besides, them Apache are the best riders around. They ride us down before we got a mile, even if we could get to our Bronx.
Anything be better than holding up here waiting for them to burn us out.
Fuck it. You do got a point there, partner. Let's do it.
Johnny positioned himself next to the door, his rifle and pistol fully loaded, while Frank fired several shots out the window on the far side of the cabin, hoping to draw the Indians' attention away from the other side. He turned and sprinted for the door as Johnny opened it and began to run toward the corral 40 yards distant. One brave stepped out from behind a boulder and let an arrow fly toward the men. Johnny fired from the hip, his Winchester blowing a hole through the Indian's midsection and flinging him backwards to lie dying in the dirt. A man off to one side aimed a rifle and fired, the bullet catching Frank in the thigh. He stumbled and staggered a few steps until he was at the corral fence.
Scatter the rest of the horses. Maybe it'll keep them busy for a few minutes.
With no time to try to saddle the horses, Frank grabbed the mane of his favorite rider and swung himself up onto the animal's back, holding his rifle in his right hand. Johnny did the same. Spurring his mount for all he was worth, Frank headed up the mountain away from the cabin, while Johnny turned his animal south to ride down the trail toward Tombstone. Frank looked back over his shoulder to see Johnny go flying from his horse, his rifle spinning out of his hands. Frank saw three Indians running toward his friend.
Oh, hell!
He rode as fast as he could toward the fallen man, guiding his mount with his knees as he sprayed rifle fire at the Indian. Two men went down, mortally wounded. A female warrior stopped her advance and stood defiantly, waiting for Frank to kill her. Frank's rifle clicked on empty, so he grabbed it by the barrel and swung at the woman's head as he rode past. He struck a glancing blow against her shoulder. An Indian wearing paint and a headdress of eagle feathers stepped into view and aimed a Winchester at Frank. Frank was knocked off his horse to land several feet from Johnny, who was lying dazed and bleeding from three separate wounds to his chest and abdomen. As a group of Indians ran toward him, Frank drew his pistol.
I'm sorry, partner. Adios.
Frank shot Johnny in the head, killing him instantly. The female Indian rushed Frank, her knife held high and her eyes red with fury. He smiled, knowing he was gonna disappoint the bitch and put the barrel in his mouth. Cal Franklin, from his hiding place in a small cave formed by the juxtaposition of several large rocks, lowered his head to his crossed arms and began to cry. He'd seen what had happened to his friends and knew that he could do nothing. He'd only awakened when the sound of gunfire had startled him awake just an hour before. Armed with only an ancient Walker Colt and no extra ammo, he knew he was as good as dead if he tried to help. He slowly pulled a small creosote bush tight to the entrance to the cave, deciding he didn't want to watch what the Indians were going to do to the bodies. As he hunkered down in the damp earth on the floor of his hiding place, he gave a short prayer the heathens wouldn't think to search for him. Falcon and Hawk slowed their horses to a walk as they got closer to the place where they'd heard the rifle shots. Through the trees, they could make out clouds of gun smoke hovering in the air. Falcon held up his hand and pulled Diablo to a halt, tying his reins to a nearby pinyon tree. He pulled his Winchester 44-40 out of its saddle boot and motioned for Hawk to circle around the other way as he crouched down. At the edge of a clearing, Falcon peered through the leaves of a hackberry bush. He could see what looked like the aftermath of a battle royale. There were at least 5 Indian bodies lying around a small cabin, and a makeshift corral stood empty. Off to one side, 2 white naked bodies lay next to each other. Both had been scalped, and their abdomens were torn open and entrails pulled out to form a grisly portrait of suffering and death. The sand had soaked up enough blood to make the area around the bodies soggy with scarlet-tinged mud. The Indian bodies had no moccasins or weapons. The remaining attackers had stripped their corpses of anything that might be useful. Falcon levered a shell into the chamber of his rifle and slowly walked into the clearing. Hawk could be seen doing the same from the opposite edge. They met in the center of the open space and stood together over the white men's bodies. Hawk squatted on his haunches and examined the dead men closely.
One good thing. Looks like they was already dead when the Injuns went to work on them. One shot t'other than did himself in. Can't say as I blame him much. There ain't no worse way to die than at the hands of an Apache, especially if he's pissed off.
Hawk and Falcon whirled around at the sound, their rifles cocked and aimed.
Hold your fire! Hold your fire!
Well, looks like we got a survivor.
That's not like Apache to leave someone behind.
The man stopped in front of him and leaned over, his hands on his knees.
My name's Calvin Franklin. Thank God you've come.
What happened here, Mr. Franklin?
Franklin ran his hands over his face. Then his eyes widened and his face paled as he saw what lay on the ground behind Falcon. He brushed by Falcon and staggered over to stand above the bodies of his friends. He stared down for a moment, swaying as if he might faint. Falcon took him by the shoulder and led him away from the bodies.
I don't rightly know what happened. I was sleeping in a little cave over there after my too much red-eye last night when I woke up to gunfire. Billy was lying dead over yonder with an arrow through his eye, and Frankie and Johnny were holed up in the cabin, shooting back at a whole bunch of redskins that had surrounded the place.
Why didn't you help them?
You seen this pistol? It's all I had. 6 shots and no spare cartridges. It would have been suicide.
I was wondering why the Indians left you alive. I guess they didn't notice your hiding place.
He stepped over to the cabin and examined the many holes in the walls.
Hawk, take a look at this. From the number of bullet holes, I'd say the Indians had at least 1 or 2 repeating rifles. Otherwise, there'd be more arrows.
It's going to make tracking the bastards more dangerous if they got Winchesters. Let's check the cabin.
The cabin looked as if a wild bear had been through it. The contents were scattered, all of the foodstuffs were gone, and the furniture had been hacked at until it was all useless.
Oh, Jesus. They're animals.
Worse. Animals only kill for food, not for fun.
How many weapons did your friends have here?
3 rifles, 2 Winchesters and an old Henry, and 3 or 4 pistols, single-shot Colts as I recall. I wonder if they found our gold stash.
Franklin walked to a far wall and bent down, removing a section of board that had been cut out.
Wouldn't matter if they did. Indians don't have any use for it, other than decoration. They wouldn't take it even if it was lying on a table right in front of them.
Franklin removed several canvas sacks of gold dust and turned, holding them up.
You're right. Here it is.
I hope it was worth it.
What are your plans now, Mr. Franklin?
I guess I'll go down to Tombstone and win her over, then get me some more partners and come back in the spring to finish mining the creek.
You're already a rich man, Franklin. Why come back?
'Cause there's still gold here to be found. I ain't leaving until I gotten it all. You fellas think you could take me down to Tombstone? I'd be willing to pay you for your trouble.
Sorry, can't help you. We're on a trail of the Indians that attacked your place. But you shouldn't have any trouble making it there on your own.
Yeah, but what if they come back?
They took off up into the Dragoons. You'll be safe if you stay on the main trail into town.
I give you one piece of advice. When you get to Tombstone, don't go flashing that gold around too much. There's men there who'd cut your throat for half of what you got in them sacks. Well, guess we better get to burying the bodies.
After helping Franklin bury his friends, leaving the Indian bodies where they lay, Falcon and Hawk got their horses and climbed into the sack.
Adios, Mr. Franklin. You take it easy when you get to town. Don't try to spend all that money the first night.
Major Wilson Tarver was badly shaken, uncertain what to do next. The thunder of rifle fire still rang in his ears, and the screams of his wounded and dying troopers in the canyon left him chilled to the bone in spite of the unusual warmness of the day.
Sergeant Boyd is dead, Major Tarver. I saw him go down with a huge hole in his head.
I can see he's among the missing, Private Newman.
Looks like we lost almost 20 men, sir. No telling how many are lying in that ravine, badly wounded, needing medical attention.
If we ride back in there to render aid, they'll slaughter the rest of us, Corporal Collins. What we need is a flanking maneuver. We must find a way to get up on that rim behind them somehow.
Sure will be hard to do on a horse, sir. And my horse has gone lame in a forefoot. I don't see any way a horse can make that climb.
Then we'll proceed on foot, damn it! Dismount!
Despite his tone, Tarver had serious reservations about the campaign. He hated the dry desert country. And above all else, he hated Indians.
If you'll pardon me for saying, sir, we need to leave plenty of men to guard our horses, or those Apaches are liable to steal them.
I don't need anyone to remind me of proper military tactics, Private. Now dismount and prepare a picket line for the horses.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
Some men climbed down from their saddles.
I want a 6-man squad around the mounts. Corporal Collins, pick 5 good marksmen and form a circle around our animals. The rest of us will climb that west ridge from the rear. Spread out in line and stay behind cover if you can find it. Surprise will be our advantage.
You don't figure they'll see us coming? I figure they're watching us right now, just waiting to see what we'll do.
Not if we employ every precaution. I assure you, these red savages are mortal men who die just as easily as anyone. Private Walker, lead the way up that ridge and stay as low as possible.
Yes, sir, Major.
Nervous sweat poured down Wilson Tarver's face from the band of his cavalry hat. Climbing stretches of impossibly steep walls of limestone, he had his rifle at the ready and the flap on his pistol holster unfastened. Yucca fans and all manner of desert plants offered the Apaches hundreds of places to hide. Extreme caution was called for.
Maybe they pulled out.
And we'll know soon enough. Now keep quiet.
Private Walker knelt down suddenly behind a clump of yucca and signaled the others to halt.
What is it?
Can't say for sure, Major, but I think I heard a noise right up yonder.
Where? Point to it.
Walker pointed to a spot slightly south of their present position. Tarver couldn't see anything amiss.
No, it's probably nothing. Continue forward, Private.
Private Walker came up in a crouch, still wary, taking small steps around the yucca fans with his Winchester held tightly to his shoulder. Tarver waited until Walker had moved on before he continued his own climb. Then he froze in his tracks. The men on either side of him stopped to stare. A blue-uniformed trooper from C Company staggered toward him. Tarver seemed to remember the boy's name as being Longworth. Blood covered his front. His arms were folded in front of him. Longworth was doing his best to hold his intestines in place.
Dear God.
His throat's been cut, too. And it looks like they cut out his tongue.
Major Tarver felt his legs tremble. How could another race of human beings do such a thing? Longworth continued to stumble toward him.
Bastards!
You want me to fetch him and help him to some shade?
Yes, please. One of you men go with him.
Private Walker started toward Longworth. Back of Walker's shirt exploded in a shower of crimson.
Everybody down!
Another gunshot lifted Private Collins off his feet, sending him tumbling backward. It was a headshot that killed him instantly. More of Major Tarver's troopers began to fall. Private Walker, blood pumping from his back, came crawling toward Tarver. He had no idea how he could help. He found he was too frightened to even raise his rifle.
Please,
Help me, Major!
At that precise moment, Wilson Tarver did the unthinkable for a trained military commander. He simply wet himself.
You gotta help me, Major! I'm dying!
Tarver heard the dying man's plea and did nothing.
Pull back, boys! They're gonna kill every one of us if we keep lying here!
It was an order Tarver knew he should have given, yet he was unable to speak. All around him, soldiers began creeping backward. He raised his head just long enough to catch a glimpse of Longworth falling into a bed of cactus. He lay there among the cactus needles, his feet still kicking.
Withdraw!
Tarver slowly realized that gunshots were also coming from behind. He glanced over his shoulder as he was inching backward and saw a band of Apache warriors armed with repeating rifles attacking the men guarding their horses. Corporal Collins was the first soldier to go down. The mounts galloped off in every direction, but it was the massacre of his troops that held Tarver's attention.
Oh God! We're doomed!
Tarver struggled to his feet, not to race downhill to aid his fellow soldiers, but to run west toward a jumble of rocks where he hoped to hide. He ran toward the rocks in a low crouch, ignoring the men he was leaving behind. Tarver had almost reached the safety of the boulders when... At first, he thought someone had hurled a stone at him due to his show of cowardice. Then a flash of pain shot through his body, and he understood he'd been shot. He tripped over a rock and fell on his face, wishing this was only a bad dream. Moments later, someone turned him over on his back. He stared into the hate-crazed eyes of a huge Apache warrior holding a knife.
Oh, no, 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 please, please, no!
Darkness hid them from all but the most watchful eyes as Issa led his warriors up an ancient trail to the highest mountaintops in the Dragoons. He had ridden the trail hundreds of times before the white men came to take him prisoner. It still bothered him that the iron horseshoes made so much noise, yet it was all but impossible to pull the shoes off.
We are close now. By the time the sun rises, we will see the valley and stream.
The Bluecoats have not found our tracks, and that is good. Without the old Shoshone, they are helpless.
Perhaps they will bring the Pawnee.
Let them come, Nana. We will kill their scouts at the high pass above the stream and hang their scalps from the limbs of the pines.
They will surely come with many more soldiers. We have only a handful of warriors to shoot them at the enemy.
Word will reach the others at Fort Thomas. All the older warriors know of the hidden meeting place.
Too many of them are dead in spirit, Issa. They are ready to die on the reservation.
They need a leader who has courage. Naiche is as brave as any Apache upon the face of Earth Mother. When they know we have the white man's repeating guns, they will come. Naiche has seen this in a peyote vision.
The old ones who fought so bravely are now nothing more than broken-spirited men. I do not think they will have the heart for battle.
Naiche has seen it in a dream. Do not fear.
It will be good to have our homeland again.
The price will be high. Some of us must die, but in the end, we will drive them from our ancestral lands, and the buffalo will return. We will live in peace. Naiche told us this as it came to him in his vision.
The Apaches rode down a rocky ledge, moving deeper into the Dragoons carrying an arsenal of repeating rifles. Issa was convinced there was nothing the Apache could not do, no enemy they could not defeat. The dry, arid land the Apache called home would soon run with the white man's blood. It was only a matter of time. Falcon was gathering wood for the campfire when he heard a horse walking toward the camp. He laid his bundle of sticks and branches down and pulled his colt, stepping behind a nearby tree as the sounds came closer. He could see Hawk in the distance, digging a small hole next to a boulder and piling rocks around the edge of it, so the smoke from the fire wouldn't be seen. As the horse walked by, the rider ducked to avoid a low-hanging branch. Falcon stepped over to him and put the barrel of the Colt to the back of the man's head.
Skin that smoke wagon out of your holster and pass it back here, mister.
The stranger drew his pistol and held it out behind his back.
Falcon? Is that you?
Falcon stepped around the horse's flanks to get a look at the man's face.
Cal Franklin. What the hell are you doing out here? I thought you were on your way to Tombstone.
Well, you see,
Hold on, Cal, save it. I'm sure Hawk will want to hear this, too. Help me grab some firewood and we'll get supper started, and you can explain what's going on.
Soon they were eating fried bacon and beans and skillet biscuits, washing it all down with strong, hot coffee as the temperature in the mountains fell.
Well, I'd walked about halfway down the mountains when this group of miners caught up with me. I hadn't had any luck finding silver or gold and were heading into town to get more supplies for the first winter snows.
And that's the story most men who come into the Dragoon seeking their fortunes. It ain't easy finding a strike rich enough to mine.
Yeah, you can say that again. We worked hard, damn hard, every day for more than a year, rain or shine. We were out there digging and moving rocks and dirt and panning every stream we could find before we finally hit pay dirt.
Uh-huh. What happened after you met the miners?
Oh, yeah, the miners. I'd been doing some thinking on that long walk down the mountain. Frank and Johnny and Billy and me go way back. Wasn't no way I was going to take the gold all of us dug out of that mountain and go to Tombstone and live the high life after what happened to my friends. So I gave those miners enough dust to see them through the winter in exchange for that bronc over there, a rifle, a couple of pistols, and some ammunition. Then I went back to our camp and gathered up that sack full of dynamite and followed you boys on up the trail.
Huh. So you want to hunt Indians?
No, Mr. Hawkins. I want to kill them.
You know how to use that hog leg on your hip?
I can usually hit what I aim at, though I ain't no fast draw.
Another gun or two wouldn't hurt.
And that dynamite'll come in handy, too.
Falcon looked up as a few heavy snowflakes began to fall.
You boys better bundle up. Looks like it's gonna get a mite cold tonight. I'll take the first watch.
The next morning, with frost covering the ground, the three men packed their horses.
We'll go single file, 50 yards apart, with Hawk leading the way. That way, if we come upon an ambush, maybe they'll only be able to get one of us.
You think that's likely?
Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if Naiche didn't leave a few braves behind to make sure no one follows him to their camp.
So we make as little noise as possible and we ride with our guns loose.
Gentlemen, you've made my day.
Naiche watched from a high, rocky outcrop. A group of five covered wagons, with half a dozen men and boys on horses serving as outriders, flanking the oxen and mules pulling the wagons, traveled the mountain path below him. A few women wearing sunbonnets and heavy woolen dresses walked beside or behind the larger rear wagon wheels. Naiche took note of a man with long silver hair, dressed in buckskins, riding out in front.
Look, Chicole, the old one is their guide, taking them west to build a new village where more white men will come to settle. We have all seen these wagons, and they stop near water to build their villages and claim the land.
The old one is very watchful. He looked at this mountain for a long time, even though we are far away. He may have spirit powers telling him we are here.
No, the white men do not hear spirit voices. They do not know where we are hidden and that we are watching them.
Should we attack now?
No. We wait for them at the pass, hiding high among the rocks. Then, we strike.
Toza has not returned to tell us if the soldiers are coming.
The Bluecoats move slowly, stopping often to rest. There will be plenty of time to kill these white eyes and ride back to camp with whatever we take.
Perhaps we should wait for Toza.
Tell the others to mount. We ride around the wagons and take our hiding places above the pass. Their Pawnee scouts drink, and they see nothing. We strike now!
The Apaches rode single file, and as he began a wide circle around the wagon, each warrior carefully loaded his Winchester and pistols.